Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Hello and welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast channeling to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and in this episode, I chat to French director, artist, and photographer Quarks about his debut feature, Tout le Dieu du Ciel, also known as All the Gods in the Sky. Over the course of the interview, we talk about the initial genesis of the project, the short film on which it is based, as well as Quarks' arduous journey to find the actress to fill the lead female role of Estelle before landing on the model turned actress Melanie Gados, who some may recognize from the last installment of the Insidious franchise, Insidious The Last Key. We also talk about a whole lot of other details about the film, including the filming, the rest of the casting, and the polarized reaction it has received at the film festivals and has played at all across the world. Before we get to the interview, I should mention this interview was recorded at the start of April, so before I had a chance to see the movie at the Dead by Dawn Festival. But having seen it, I thought it was great, and I would recommend that you track it down, listener. Also, there was a couple of moments I thought about editing out of this episode, including me getting a lesson on how to pronounce Quarks at the very beginning of the interview, but I thought this added to the fun of the episode, so decided to keep it in the end. Also, while I don't think it actually subtracts from the interview, I should mention that Quarks was in some sort of cafe when this interview was recorded. So be warned that you may occasionally hear the clanking of some plates in the background. But like I say, you could still hear him fine. It doesn't take away from the interview itself. Anyway, now that that has all been said, without any further ado, here is Quarks.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, good.
Hi, Quarks. That is how you pronounce that, right?
Quarks, yes, exactly. Quarks. Quarks. French way. Or you can pronounce it, whether Quarks or Quarks or whatever you want. It's all good.
Quarks. Okay, Quarks. Okay.
It's a weird name anyway.
Nice to meet you, and nice to have you on New Horror Express.
Nice to meet you too. I'm glad to be here.
Good to have you on the show. So we're going to talk about your debut feature, All the Gods in the Sky. And it was based on a short film that you did called A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky.
So exactly.
Could you tell us a little bit about the story of the film and a little bit about what the origin of how you came up with this story? What was the genesis for it?
Right. So the story of the film is really it's a dark story that deals with remorse and how come remorse can totally eat you alive and makes you actually physically and emotionally sick. That was really my main point. And the story deals about a brother and a sister. It's a twisted sibling relationship, and the brother lives with his sister in a secluded house in the French countryside. And her sister, I mean, the brother is responsible for an accident that his sister had when she was a kid, and that accident led her sister to be totally paralyzed. So it's now 20 years later, and this sister is just living in a room locked up by her brother, and he's actually trying to take care of her while thinking that he's gonna be called by beings from abroad and from with aliens. That's pretty much my story.
And how did you first kind of come up with the idea of this story? Going back the short.
Yes, it's a weird. It came up to me in a very weird way, because it was in 2012. I was working in an island, a French island called La Réunion, and I was working on a photographic shoot, and this photographic shoot dealt about death. And I was taking photograph of corpses in a morgue, and I had access to this place because one of my best friend, his wife was an anapath. I don't know exactly how to say that in English, but it's the people who's taking care of the corpses once they're dead, and they're making sure that if it's a suicide or is it a murder or something like that. And so the first corpse that comes up to me is a lady. She's 30 years old, and I'm asking information about her. What happened to her? Why is she dead? And so the doctor in the room tells me that this woman was found in her brother's house, and she was laying dead with her brother for 3 weeks before that the brother could let her go and call the authority. So for 3 weeks, her brother just fed her, put her to sleep, wash her, and he couldn't just let her go because I think the bond that they had together was so strong. And for me, this story was really amazing. So I tried to imagine actually what was the life of those brother and sister. So I totally imagined it, but I wanted to give again a personality to this to the souvenir of this dead person that I had in front of me, and this incredible story that that my friend told me about her. And so that's how it came up to me actually.
That's an incredible story. That's
pretty much
so weird.
Yeah.
And yeah, and so you decided to turn this into a film. I realize that you have a background in painting,
yes,
and photography.
Yes.
What was it? Were you always interested in filmmaking as well, or?
Oh yes, definitely. Since my childhood, I wanted to be a director, but I also wanted to, first I wanted to educate my eye and educate my sense of my artistic touch. So I didn't thought it was appropriate for me, as the other people usually do. They all think that they are Steven Spielberg right away when they're 20. Not me. They're jumping right away into filmmaking, but I really wanted to get myself an artistic education. So I had some facility with the drawings and with paintings. So I started as a photographer. Actually, I used to live back there in Los Angeles for a few years, and I started to photograph children on the baseball field. That was my super first job. And then after that, I start paintings, and I start having some exhibition, and it started working pretty nice for me. So I started to be a little bit famous with the painting, and more and more and more, until the point of I thought that I did it. So I was satisfied with myself to the point where I was at right now as a painter. So I made a lot of money with it. I was quite famous about it. My painting was selling pretty good. So I'm thinking this is really now the time to move forward. So I become a fashion photographer. So I went to I moved to Indonesia, and I live in Indonesia for 3 years. And for these 3 years, I started to be a fashion photographer, and in parallel, I started to be a comedian for a sitcom, for an Indonesian sitcom. Because I wanted also to acquire some knowledge about directing and how it goes in front and behind the camera. And after that, I came back to France. That was in the beginning of 2000, and I started to shoot some short film. I was thinking, okay, now it's set. Now it's time to be what you want to be for real, which means a filmmaker. And I started to direct short films. And so I really started from bottom, you know, like no money, short film, do whatever I want, having no limits, no boundaries, no rules, and just please myself. And so after I was doing one short film, two short film, three short films, and then it started also to have a little success worldwide in the festival. And it started to grow a little bit more and more and more and more until I made a short film called A Dark Night. And with A Dark Night, it's a very dark short film that deals with street prostitution in Paris. And I won the best director at the Los Angeles Independent Film Festival. So that got me a little bit of credit. And right after that, I started to write and shoot A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky. And with that film, we really had the strongest and the most amazing success I would ever have dreamt of. We went to more than 170 festivals worldwide. We won 90 of them grand prize. So we went to a really prestigious festival like Sundance, Fantasia, so many of them. And so I was really, really pleased about it. And with this success, I had the chance of finally meeting the right producer to be able to work with and turn my short into a feature, which now is All the Gods in the Sky.
From the sounds of what I've read about A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky, it didn't sound like it was the easiest to come together.
What do you mean? I didn't get you. It seems like what?
It seems like it wasn't an easy process to bring it together. I read something. I saw an interview with you where you said your lead actor, Jean-Luc Cochard, broke his arm quite early on in the shoot. And I also read a quote from you that said it took a nearly two-year search to find Melanie Gaydos, who plays the sister Estelle.
Yes, yes. To be more precise, it's not really 2 years, but it's a bit more than 1 year. Yes, it was really a horrific process because I wanted a lot with this story and with this film, and I wanted to make a lot of attention to the artistic direction and the images, but unfortunately I really didn't have enough money to be able to play the way I wanted to play. So I didn't want to make any concession actually. I said, okay, I don't have enough money, but I don't care. We got to find some solution. We got to make the best possible film here. But it was a really, really difficult process. So as you said, yeah, Jean-Luc Couchard, my main actor, just broke his arm on the second or third day of shooting. That was just horrible because everybody thought that that's it. I mean, the project will never be able to wake up from that and to come back to life after that, because we lost so much money. On the few money that we had, we lost 90% of it. So we had to start all over again and wait 3 months for Jean-Luc to be able to heal. And that was really, really a nightmare. And we had other incredible moments on us, because one set on the entire location set just caught fire because lightning got on the set and it just burned the set. I mean, what was the chance of that to happen? And we had the check that got lost on the mail, and it got intercepted, and some people stole some money from. I mean, it was just a nightmare. But all the team and everybody, I mean, me, the actor, the technician, they were all so motivated, and they really believed in me and the story that I wanted to tell. And they all stick together, got really strong, and we overcome all this very, very difficult situation.
Yeah, it does sound like it was quite a difficult situation. Did you ever consider like changing actors from Jean-Luc, or were you very much set on having him in the role?
One day, I mean, the day that it happened, we went with my producer. We went to see him at the hospital, and so he told us that of course he was really sorry and blah blah blah, but I mean that didn't help us too much. But we spoke with the doctor, and the doctor said he couldn't do anything for at least 2 months. And we thought really we couldn't wait 2 months. So that on that day, we had the idea of really changing comedian. But I was so sad because I really wanted Jean-Luc so much. And we made the rehearsal for more than 6 months with him. And everybody was set up for him, the prosthetic and the makeup and the dress. And everything was for Jean-Luc. So I asked my very good friend, Thierry Frémont, who's actually also playing on film himself. He plays the role of the uncle who worked on the garage. And I asked him, do you want the part? And he said, yes, I can do that. He's a very famous French comedian and he's really, really good as well. But after we all spoke and everybody was crying and everybody was depressed. And I mean, it was just really a nervous breakdown. But we finally decided that we were going to wait for Jean-Luc to heal. And we're going to look for some more money. And we're going to work even harder. And we're going to finish this movie with Jean-Luc. That's how it happened.
How did you first attract these people to the project? Because, like you say, Thierry's quite a famous actor in France, and Jean-Luc is also quite an experienced actor and is probably best known to horror fans as one of the stars of The Ordeal, or Calvaire, I think is
exactly. Yes, yes.
So how did you attract them to the project in the first place?
Well, for Jean-Luc, it was really weird because I myself didn't really know Jean-Luc. I only saw Jean-Luc in a Belgian movie called Dick and Eck, and I thought it was okay, but I mean, not that much, more than okay. I thought it was okay, but I thought that his part, his role was really, really interesting. But that's it. I mean, I've seen it in 2006 or 2007. It was like 10 years ago. And from there on, I didn't thought about Jean-Luc anymore. And when my producer asked me, who do you see for this role? Really, I didn't have the chance or the time to think about it before. And I don't know what happened with my mouse, but my mouse just said, Jean-Luc Couchard. And from this day, I still don't understand why I said that. Because really, I had no idea that who he was, and was he good or not good? I don't know. I just say I feel I need to work with this guy, with Jean-Luc Couchard. So everybody looked at me with round eyes because he played in what you call Calvaire. It was his first role, but he had a very small role. And later on, he only made comedy. That's it, just comedy. And so everybody's thinking, yeah, but why are you taking Jean-Luc Couchard? I mean, this is maybe not so smart. And I really wanted to defend my opinion and my idea because I said we need to work with Jean-Luc Couchard. I don't know why, but we need to work with this guy. So I just called him and I sent him the script. And he just said, yes. I said, yeah, that's a very interesting script. It's well written. And this is really something that I'm not really used to do. And I'm accepting the challenge because that's exactly what I want to do right now. So I think I got lucky with that.
On the other main role of the sister, obviously you had a very clear vision of what you wanted. But as the search for the actress, for the sister Estelle, took over a year, was there any point where you were thinking, I'm going to reel back and I'm just going to get a regular actress and use prosthetics? Or
no, just, never.
That was never came into conversation.
Never. I told my producer right on, straight up, the first day that I put the project on the table, I told them that if I was really radical at that time, and I said, if I don't find the right person to play the role of Estelle, I will not make the movie. There is not one chance in a million that I was willing to take a regular comedian, put prosthetic on their face and everything like that. I said, no way, I will not do that. I wanted, because the role of Melanie, that she plays Estelle, it's really, really a difficult role. And she has to play this character who is just laying down on a bed for 20 years, locked up in a room with her face totally disfigured. And I wanted to find the right person that incarnates distress and sadness right away, the first thing that you saw. And I wanted to see the truth I didn't want to be a part of an acting or something that could be fake. I wanted to see reality really through the lens of the camera. And when I first see Melanie, I was searching so much and for so long, and I was going to a hospital, and I was going to a burn unit, and I was going to mental hospital, and I've seen them all, but it was really, really difficult, because every time, for one reason, well, it didn't work. And one day I opened the internet, I made a Google search, and I just ran into an interview of Melanie. She was doing this interview for the magazine Elle, and she was just talking about her story, talking about her life, and talking about her genetic disease and how it works for her, how she's overcome all this problem that she had in her life, and how she made it a force for her, and now how she become from being very sad as a kid and as a teenager, she become a very strong woman and very inspiring artist. And she was just telling about her journey. And when I saw that, when I hear this, I'm thinking, that's it, that's exactly the person that I need to have in my film. And she has to say yes, because if she's gonna say no, I'm gonna be so sad. And at the same time, I really had not too much hope, because I totally didn't know this lady, and she looked a little bit fragile, and I knew that her parkour, was quite difficult. And if you see the movie, that you can see that this character has to play, she's doing very, very awful stuff sometimes, huh? Because she's wearing diapers all the time, and she's pissing and cheating on herself, and it's very, very difficult moment. And I just thought that I was gonna send her the script, and she was gonna throw it back on my face. But after hearing this interview from her, I looked over the internet. I just I found her email address. Very lucky I found her, because she didn't have any agent and nothing, so it was really complicated to find. But I finally find it, and I sent her a mail telling that I was a French filmmaker, and she never heard of me, and but I was going to make the best short film ever, and I needed to work with her so much. And so she replied to me. She said, okay, why not, you know, send me the script. And so I did, and she read the script, and 2 hours later she was calling me back saying, this is exactly what I'm looking for, this is exactly what I'm waiting for so long, this is the story that I want to make. So I was so ecstatic. I was so happy. I jumped everywhere in my room, and we started to work together.
That's great. Were you ever worried that she, I mean, like at that point, I believe that Melanie was has a modeling. She's done various modeling and stuff, and at that point,
yes,
hadn't done a lot of acting. I think she starred in a Rammstein video.
Yes. But
in terms of the acting experience, I mean, it seems like a difficult role for somebody who's a relative novice to be 100%. Diving into.
100%. I was also very worried about that, because I said, now, okay, it's very good. She said yes to me. Okay, perfect. But now let's see what she can do and what she's able to do. Even though she's willing, it doesn't mean that she can do it. And so I was a little bit skeptical and a little bit worried about that. But then I made a flight to Paris. We start talking. And after 5 minutes, all my doubts were over. We started to do a little rehearsal. And she was just amazing, by the way. I mean, the emotion that came through only her moving just a little bit of face, or moving a little bit of hand, or just the emotion that was going through her eyes was just amazing. So I was really blown away right away. And the performance that she's doing in my film is really, really, it's amazing. It's amazing, because she never speaks. She never talks. And it's pretty much, she's supposed to be just a body, but she's so much more than just a body. I mean, there's a lot of communication, a lot of emotion, a lot of sensibility that is going through our face and through our looks and through our eyes. So for me, it was really, really a blessing to be able to work with Melanie. And what she gave back to me is really a true gift.
And obviously the bit really paid off given the reception that the short and now the feature film has received at the various film festivals it's been at so far.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Can you repeat? Excuse me, because somebody was speaking in the same time in the room, so I couldn't hear you.
That is no problem. I was just saying that it's a bet that obviously paid off as.
Oh yes.
Given the reception, both the short and now the feature film has received at the film festivals, it's paid off.
Oh yes, 100%. It was not at the beginning. It was not 100% sure. I'm really, really not. I was taking a pass that could be a little risky. But at the end, I really think I was the most the luckiest filmmaker alive on this project. And it just clicked. And the connection between Jean-Luc and Mélanie. Because it's nobody would have thought of mixing Jean-Luc Couchard, an actor from Belgium that is playing comedy movie, with Mélanie Galdos, an underground model that is having a genetic disease, and the mix of those two characters is just blending perfectly, and there it's a true relationship that just that is being born between them, and it's so good. I mean, I really think that it's working really, really well.
Excellent.
I could definitely say that on many levels, I got really lucky.
Was it always your idea to turn A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky into a feature film? Because at like 36 minutes, it's a bit longer than your normal short. So
right.
Is that always the intention?
Right. Since the beginning, my intention was to make a feature film. The script of Nearly Perfect Blue Sky was actually the script of a feature film. But I've been knocking to all the doors of all the producers in Europe. And everybody was telling me, yeah, it's well written. I mean, we can see that the project is really, really interesting. But we are too worried about how you will shoot it because it's really dark. It's really hardcore. And this is just not for us because it's just too much. And so I got really pissed off with this because I knew I had a very strong story and all the film was already made in my mind. So I knew that the film was good, but how can I convince other people when they were very, very old, very scary, and all say, oh yes, but we don't lie, we don't want, it's too risky, it's too dangerous, and blah, blah, blah. So that really, really pissed me off so much. So I'm thinking, okay, fuck it. And I will take the core of my story, I mean the darkest core of my story, and I will turn it myself into a short film. And this short film for me was, I mean, the idea with this short film is to have a very nice, like business card or short reel, just in order for me to show the people what I can do and what I want to do. And I wanted to make it shorter than 37 minutes, of course, because that cost me more money to shoot longer. But I couldn't let myself to cut very important element of the story. I needed the audience, even for the short, to be able to be attached with the people, the character, that they care for them, that they are scared with them. And I'm thinking that if I was doing like a 10-minute short film or 20-minute short film only with nice images, I mean, that was not gonna work for me. I wanted to the audience of the short film to have the feeling that they were not seeing a short film, but that they were already seeing a feature film. And that was my point.
It seems like the part of it, obviously part of the core of the film is this relationship between the brother and sister. I was wondering, did Jean-Luc and Mélanie immediately hit it off? Was an immediate chemistry there in terms of the acting?
The question was, did they click in right away? I mean, did they get along right away?
And that's correct.
Yes, absolutely. Because the first time, I mean, Mélanie is an amazing girl, huh? But she's a special girl. Huh? She's a very special girl. The way she speaks and the way she moves and everything that deals with her have a little touch of strangeness. And Jean-Luc is also He's a very Belgian guy, always very, like very smiley and very funny and always laughing. So he put her totally at ease right away because she was in a country that she never been before. She was surrounded by people that doesn't speak her language, and she was doing she was playing in a film for the first time of her life, and she had to do very, very complicated scene where she's naked all the time and many bad things happen to her. So. So it was. I thought maybe it could be not so easy, but the two of them just get along really, really well, very, very easily, and they had the same spirit as the rest of the team. They really wanted to make this movie, and they wanted to make this movie the best possible. And so they were very dedicated to that. They put all their talent and all their force into. Let's make the best movie possible. And so, yeah, right away we started to rehearse a bit. And after a few hours of rehearsal, I was totally secure and cool. And I'm thinking, okay, I got my casting. I got my cast, I got my character, and my movie is right on track.
This is a little bit of a signal, but I was wondering why the title change from the short. Obviously, the movie is based on the short. Why did you change the title from A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky to All the Gods in the Sky? Was there any particular reason for that?
Yes. Well, at the beginning, when my producer asked me to change the title, it was really a heartbreaking decision. I really didn't want to do that. I'm thinking, well, how come? You know, this is my story, and I've been living with this story for more than 2 years, and this story is A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky, and that's it. I there's no way I'm going to change the title, and blah, blah, blah. But then, I put some, we say in French, I put some water in the wine. That means, I cooled down a little bit and I start thinking. The problem with this title is that because of the short film had such an amazing success that every time you were typing the title into Google or any search engine or on the internet, you were having the short film that were popping up. And the name A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky was shown on millions of pages on the web. So we were really scared that there was going to be a confusion between the short film and the feature film. So I started thinking, and then I came up with the title, All the Gods in the Sky, which made it for me. Now after the time just flew a little bit, I'm really happy to have changed the title. But then at the beginning it was not a simple decision.
Excusez-moi, s'il vous plaît, un peu moins fort, s'il vous plaît. Juste un tout petit peu. Mais j'entends, mais j'arrive pas, j'ai pas internet, ça capte pas.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's,
yes.
That's all right. No problem. I was also wondering what was the, in terms of getting All the Gods in the Sky made, what was the journey in terms of funding? Obviously, the award wins and the critical acclaim that their short received at festivals, obviously that gave you a bit of kudos. But I see that there was a crowdfunding campaign, so it was partially crowdfunded. Yeah, well, and how was the funding generally come together for it?
No, the crowdfunding campaign was really the worst idea that I got forced into doing this, and I didn't want to do it. And my person said, yeah, we should try, and blah, blah, blah. And think, for me, I didn't want to ask people for money. I didn't want to beg for money to make my film. And I was thinking that this is not, if I cannot find the money on the regular path, the regular way, by finding producer and finding, that means that my movie is not good enough. And I didn't want to go through this. So they pushed me so hard, say, yeah, you need to do. Okay, we did, but we didn't get $1 or €1 with this crowdfunding, because it didn't work. I didn't put my heart in it. And so there was no money that we got from crowdfunding, nothing, zero. But what happened after the success of the short is that Canal Plus, it's a famous TV French TV channel that are producing a lot of feature films. Yeah. They called me and they said, okay, let's talk because what you're doing is really interesting and maybe we want to invest. And thinking, yeah, that should be a very good idea. So I came to their office and we spoke an afternoon, and then after I tried to secure them into make them think that I'm not that crazy and that I can do something very good and very professional. And so they agreed. So they start, I think they gave us something like $350,000, which is of course obviously not enough to make film, but I mean, it was a good start. And because Canal Plus went into production, a lot of other group or investors or producer got really secure about that. Say, okay, if Canal Plus is pre-buying the movie, that must be a really good movie. And anyway, it's going to be released in movie theater and it's going to be screened on TV after that. So let's go. So after it was, I mean, I wouldn't say easy, but I mean, producing and shooting the feature film was 10 times easier than producing and shooting the short film. That's for sure.
That's very interesting, because I was also going to ask, was there like a step up in terms of directing your first feature as compared to directing the short films that you had previously directed? But
right.
You found it easier.
Oh, but no comparison whatsoever, nothing. I mean, this, I went through the worst process ever by directing the short film. So every problem that a director could have on a shoot, I had it. So, I mean, for me, after that, it could only be a walk in the park. And that's exactly what it was, a walk in the park to produce and to shoot my feature compared to the short. Of course, it was not like always super easy, but really, for me, with the experience that I had before, it was really nothing compared to that. I could say it was sort of easy compared to the problem that I had before.
Yeah. No comparable disasters to John Luke breaking his arm and all that kind of stuff.
No. And on top of that, when I was on the first shoot, I had a team maybe of 30 to 40 people. And now I had a team of 100 people. So, I mean, everything changed. Everything was easier, and we worked with the top professional. They wanted to work also on this film with us. So everything went very smoothly on the shooting of the feature, and everything seems simpler. Yeah.
I saw a video of you introducing the film at the London Film Festival, where you said that you would wanted the audience to either love it or hate it, and nothing in between. So you obviously made this film with that in mind, for like have people having strong gut reactions to it.
Right. I didn't plan actually to do that from the beginning. When I was writing, I didn't thought to myself, let's do something very radical and let's really separate people into two categories, whether I love it or whether I hate it. I didn't have that in mind at the beginning at all. But when I introduced my film at BFI, somebody asked me about this question, and then I thought about it, and I say, I don't want to be mild, and I don't want to be in between, right? It's true that I really want to create strong emotion and strong feelings. And that's actually what's going on when people see my film. They really tend to either really, really like it so much or really, really hate it so much. But very rarely I had something like a mild review saying, it's all right, it's not bad, I've seen better, but it's okay. No, I never had that. I always had very, very strong reaction towards it, and that's something I quite like.
The other thing I noticed from several of the reviews of the movie is that they reference the New French Extremity movement, which covers films like Martyrs and Frontiers and things like that. Is that a tag you're comfortable with, and are you aware and like those films or dislike those films?
No. Of course, I don't like all of them, I like some of them, and I was very, very surprised myself when I wrote this. When I read this, because I never thought about it, and I never compared myself to New French Extremism or anything like that. I have my very good friend, someone that I really, really love the work so much, is of course Gaspar Noé. Mm. that made Irreversible and Enter the Void and so many incredible and Love and so many incredible movies.
This is one of the climax.
Climax a few months ago, and of course this is like, for me, this is really the maestro of filmmaking in Europe and even in the world right now. I mean, it's really for me the top end. But I never compare myself to new French extremism or extremity. I don't know. I never thought that even people would compare me to that, because in my mind, I just made a drama, actually. I really maybe didn't see the film as people were gonna apprehend it. So I was not disappointed that they compare me to such a great filmmaker as some of those guys and those girls, because I'm thinking about Marina Devan, for example, that I really like her job with the movie called Scars, and she was also very compared to a new French extremism. But this is quite flattering on certain level for me, but I'm not sure if I'm recognizing myself in it. I don't know. I don't know. Yes, I'm not sure. But I'm cool with it. Definitely, I'm cool. It's for me. 2 years ago, not so many people knew about my work and what I was doing, and now they are comparing me to those people. So of course, it's an upgrade for me. Definitely. But to let you know, if I'm really totally, I think it's true. I it's not for me to judge, I would say.
The other thing was, I all the reviews kind of mention how visually ambitious the film is, and do you feel like you're obviously your artistic background really helped with that in terms of bringing out the visuals of the film, because it's something that seems to be noted, whether the review is good or bad, or you know, a rave or not like it so much, they always mention it.
Right. I totally 100% feel that he helped me. My artistic background in the choice of my artistic direction on the film was really a huge help for me. When I see most of the French movies that are being released, I mean, some of them are quite good, but all the time I really have most of the time I have the feeling of seeing a TV movie. You know, it's like those people sometimes they have a strong story, but they don't really know how to put it on the top with the strong imagery. They don't have that in them, and for me, every time I'm thinking, oh, that's a shame, because I mean that's really so good, but it looked so bad, and I didn't want that to happen to me. I really wanted to apprehend my film like a gem, like something at the same time ugly and beautiful, and I wanted to show ugly in the most beautiful way. Yeah, that's what I wanted to do.
Absolutely. I can get that. And just making something that's very purely cinematic. I was also thinking it must have been very difficult in terms of, you were saying that you felt you were making a drama. It seems like the movie has a lot of different elements, drama, sci-fi, body horror. Was it very difficult to get the tone just right, you know, striking the balance between all these kind of spinning plates?
No. It was not difficult, because it was not a plan of balancing everything. I mean, I just had a story to write. I mean, a story to tell, a story that was already pretty much in my head. So, I mean, the story controlled me and not me controlling the story, really. And that really something that I felt, and this it happened at some point from one page to another. I really didn't know what was going on, what was going to happen, and I was just kept on writing without ever thinking to myself, is it the right amount of horror, or the right amount of this, or the right amount of that. I mean, I really didn't consider that like an interesting question for myself. I had to tell this story, and that's it. And so, no, I didn't make any concession. And the producer, really, my producers, really understood my conception of how I wanted to tell the story and make this movie. And so they really trusted me a lot. And even though sometimes they were not sure, they didn't really understand where I wanted to go, they let me do whatever I wanted. And I was very blessed about that, because most of the time when you are a young filmmaker and this is your first feature film, I mean, you have your producer that are really treating you like a kid, and they want this and you have to do it, and they want that and you have to do it. In this case, it was really not at all the case, actually. And they gave me a lot of freedom. And I was really, really happy about that, because I really could make the movie that I had in mind. Right. Yeah.
I was also going to ask, obviously, the film has played at a number of genre festivals, the sci-fi horror festivals. Is this something you're looking to pursue further in terms of, will you want to make more horror movies, or is it just going to be whatever the story is that grabs you, rather than kind of making a furrow into a particular genre?
100% option number two, 100%. As I was saying, I never had a feeling, for example, that I was making a sci-fi movie, because, okay, there is the ingredient sometimes of sci-fi movie in my movie, because it deals with alien and beings from elsewhere, but that's only a reflection of the mind of the character. Those people and those beings actually doesn't exist in reality in my movie, in the reality of my movie. It doesn't exist. This is just the sick mind of this guy who doesn't want to face his responsibility, and he's thinking, well, everybody's going to be fine at the end, because the aliens are going to take me and my sister away into a better place, and everything's going to be okay. Actually, this is totally not the case. And so when people were telling me, this is like a sci-fi movie, I'm thinking, no, guys, you're totally wrong. It's totally not a sci-fi movie. And for me, it's not even a horror film. I mean, it deals with horrific situation, but it's more, for me, I really see it to a rural drama. Mm-hmm. And that's how I would tag my film. But I mean, everybody can see it the way he wants to see it. He wants to see it as an horror sci-fi, let it be. But it's really not what I think.
In terms of going forward as well, obviously, the film is still touring festivals, still doing very well. Are you just focused on that at the moment and the journey of this film, or do you have a next project in mind? Are you currently working on something at the moment?
Yes, sort of both. So I'm, of course, right now I'm quite focused on going along with the film and showing it everywhere I could in the world, and I'm being invited to speak with my film, so I'm very, very happy about that, of course. But at the same time, I just finished the script of my next film, and we are now into an argument with my producer, who now we are not really we don't really agree with the story right now. So they are giving me more hard time on the second one that they gave me on the first one. So we are working on this process right now, which is a very long and giving me a headache kind of process. But we have to go through this. And so I'm doing both. I'm working on the release of my film, All the Gods in the Sky, and at the same time, I am working on producing the script of my new feature film that is called These Things Inside Me.
These Things Inside Me. Can you tell us anything about that, or do you want to just keep that under wraps for now?
Yeah, right now I don't really want to talk about it, because it is possible that many things are going to change, and so it's really too early right now, I mean, for me to speak about it.
Oh, okay. Can I just ask, is it another genre picture, or is it just...
Well, for me, genre picture really doesn't, it's like I'm a little bit weird maybe, but it doesn't mean anything for me, genre picture, yeah. Because I think every film is a genre film, you know. It's like you're talking about like a cop and a cop movie. I mean, it's going to be a genre film. It's a cop movie or a comedy. It's a genre film. It's a comedy. I don't really get the point of like this genre film. I'd say it's still, I mean... I'm very bad of defining myself. I don't really know what is a genre film. I don't know. I don't really. I cannot really answer this question. For me, a genre film before what I used to think is like something very very well labeled, very very well tagged. Okay, it's a zombie film. It's a werewolf film. It's a ghost film. It's an alien film. Okay, that's sort of a genre film. But I think that my movie doesn't really include all this aspect. So, but still, everybody's telling me that is a genre film. So now, okay, I go with the flow and I say, all right, it's a genre film. But the next one, is it a genre film? I'd say yes. If you think that this one is a genre film, then the next one will be a genre film also.
Well, it seems like it seems very much like it's a mix of things, and maybe that's what this film is as well. But I won't push you too much further on that, because I know you're early on in the stage of getting it made. It's been really nice talking to you, and I really look forward to seeing All the Gods in the Sky at the Dead by Dawn Festival here in Edinburgh in just a couple of weeks.
Great. Great, great. Sorry for my rusty English. I hope everybody understood me.
Your English is a million times better than my French, and I'm sure everybody will have understood you perfectly. It's been
all right, perfect. Really good, I think. We are all saved.
Okay. Well, I will let you go now. I wish you best of luck with all the continued success for All the Gods in the Sky.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking to you today. Thanks.
That was Quark, sir, and it was a pleasure speaking to him too. Plus, like I said at the start there, I really enjoyed when I did get to see All the Gods of the Sky at the Dead by Dawn Festival. And you can hear more of my views on that in our Dead by Dawn special that I put out last month. Before we head on out, I just want to thank my guest Quark one last time for coming on the show, and thank you, listener, for tuning in, and quickly remind you that you can rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher, where you can check out all previous episodes of New Horror Express. As well as that, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, but until next time, see ya!